our final visitor on Poetry Month on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. We end our month-long visits with poets today, chatting with Aubrey Ryan on Scribble.
Good to meet you, Aubrey. We've heard about you from people like Jeff Mason and Colleen Sibthorpe, but neither of us knows who Aubrey Ryan really is. Can you fill us in about 2 minutes?
Oh, my. Well, I'm a Davenport native, and I lived all over, but I moved back when I was expecting my first son. So I'm a mother, and I'm happy to be back here on the prairie and by the river.
And you are a poet.
I am.
How do you account for that? What is it that turned you to poetry?
Oh my! I've always been drawn to words and cadence and rhythm.
Always being back.
Always.
When you were three.
Mm-hmm. Even as a child. But it's taken me up until even just a few months ago to feel comfortable calling myself a poet.
Well, that's an interesting question. At what point can someone who writes poetry call herself a poet?
That is an interesting question. I'm not sure. I'm sure it is different for everyone. I think I carried...
Well, what does it mean to be a poet rather than just to write poetry?
Oh, my... Goodness.
Let me ask it in even
a... You could write a poem about that, couldn't you?
is for you, is writing poetry a vacation or a vocation?
Oh, it's a medicine for me.
Okay.
It's a necessary medicine for me. And I think that's why I'm comfortable calling myself
that. So you didn't write... You're a poet when you become sick.
Oh, I suppose a medicine... As a prophylactic medicine, maybe I should say. It's a tonic for me. Maybe you could say a vitamin.
How much of your time do you devote to poetry? Is it when you have spare time, or do you make time for it?
More recently, I've been making time for it as a way to stay healthy and in body and mind. I've found that just the act of writing helps calm my thoughts and really focus my energy. So as I'm sure both of you know, there's a lot going on in the world that can sort of mess with your head.
That can drive you crazy.
Mm-hmm. And my thoughts about writing have really shifted lately as far as just the actual act of writing being for me instead of being for an audience. So now when there's something that's bothering me, I sit and I write and I see what comes out, and I usually leave that feeling a little bit more focused and able to work as a
How as can a poetry do that better than a sermon?
I'm not sure. I'm not a minister, so I'm sure a sermon does that. Maybe that does it for a minister, but because poetry is my art, it does that for me. That's what it does.
What inspires you to write a poem? I mean, as you look at what you have written, is it your personal experiences, your objects in the world, events in the world? What stirs you to write poetry, or do you just sit down and start writing?
Currently, it's whatever I'm fearful of, what worries me, and I'm worried about a lot. So that is what that's what stirs me.
Well, let's hear a poem.
Yeah.
Okay. This is called I Am Telling You Stories. I am telling you stories. Believe me, you were in your home, in the kitchen of your home, a stove full of logs and a story. Once there was a woman whose belly curved like the long horizon, and she fell from the sky and gave birth to land. Once we were dirt, once salt of sea. Does this help your heart? Do you fear like me for your children? When no one knows where land, when no one knows where that sky woman, fierce with seed. I'm telling you stories. The sky woman died and her heart became berries. Someday you'll be so old, your hands a cross between roots and sparrows. You'll have enough wood, or you will not. Your children will grow, or they will not. Here, a story where they are men with hands in loam, bluestem and dock. Here is a story. You are a prairie where your children stand rowdy for the sun. You are old and they lay you down. Your ribs petal open on the prairie, and where once was your heart, there's a bird telling stories. Children, there once was a woman. Children, there is earth here that made you.
That's something.
That is. I like the way you play on, you know, the minute somebody says, let me tell you a story, they're going to lie, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're doing just the reverse.
Oh, thank you.
Right?
I hope.
So you, in the course of the poem, you redefine story. Did that happen as you wrote it? I mean, what began this poem?
I'm really interested in the evolution of story and story as story throughout the evolution of just human beings and how story has worked, story and myth and religion, and the reasons we tell stories. And I think, again, this was a poem that started just with me feeling worried and not having any comfort. And I just thought, what is a story would help me?
Do you remember a first line or an idea? Is it an idea or a what?
I Am Telling You Stories was definitely the first line. I'm working, my full-length collection is titled I Am Telling You Stories. And it's centered around just a cycle of stories. And then Believe Me was another first line. And originally the poem had Believe Me repeated again and again and again. And that sort of got edited out.
So
do you edit very carefully? Do you edit repeatedly? I mean, how long does it take you to craft a poem?
I do. It depends. My first draft is always handwritten. And sometimes that ends up just being a couple lines handwritten, and then I get excited to put it on the screen and see how it will look on the page. I really like how lines end up looking, and I like that part of the editing process when you transcribe what you've written in your handwriting to the screen. So it really just depends on the poem how long it takes to edit.
It fascinates me. The whole business of writing. I am not a comfortable writer, and I'm slightly embarrassed at putting anything in print. It seems that when you do that, it gains a permanence, and you can't disclaim it anymore. When you put it on paper, particularly if it gets published, then you're stuck with it.
Mm-hmm.
And as I look back over the years, I think, oh dear, I'm stuck with this. I wish I could get rid of it, but I can't.
Yes. I empathize.
It's better to talk because you can always say, oh, you didn't understand me. Or let me do that over again.
Yes.
I was just reading a Mary Oliver essay in which she talks about how she writes and revises a poem. And she said, finally, after 40 or 50 revisions, the poem begins to have some possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
So do you struggle with it that much or?
Yes.
Or over a period of days? Or, I mean, do you sit down and?
Again, it usually just depends on the poem. And often I will be writing it by hand and, you know, feel sort of a excitement about the poem building. And then I'll go to my computer and type it out. And if I'm lucky, I'll come back to it in a few weeks and I'll still like it. And then I'll... Or I haven't submitted for a long time, but I used to then at that point start submitting.
So when you start, you have no idea where the poem is going, right? So
hopefully,
or do you discover that somehow you're out of control? Or
I think that is a marker for me of when a poem will be good is if I don't know where it's going and it leads me somewhere surprising, or leads me to a different place than I thought that I was going to end up. Usually if I have an idea of where I want the poem to go, it might make my mind a little bit stuck and I'm not as free thinking.
Well, I like that first one you read. Can we have one more?
Sure. Yes. I'd be happy to.
You don't have to pick. You can read them all.
This is called All the Words for Salvation. My mother tells me not to think sad thoughts about the refugees. And I'm thinking of me at 10, muddled with a gun from the safe gun safe, and my two boys already queued up in the middle of me, there on the rich side of town. I shot the snow. Once I posed for a painter man in an empty place, the place lonely on a lot and us alone, his look like soot in a lung. I'd engineered that end, like the black drunk swim in Superior, like that semi in the snow. And now look at me, not on a raft. Look at me, not holding my children on a tipped rim of sea. Look at me in Iowa. I'm so sad, but I'm a wide-opened thing. This land so sad without buffalo, without a long system of roots. I'm planting and thinking of the mother on the raft, and I need hands for some task. Sad is not her word. Something awful is her word, and what a lie to pretend it's not there in Leviathan. My land is empty of anything better than the bearing of her. My hands on her face, and let me be a land. You, mother, oh, how your babies are beautiful.
Wow.
You are tied to the land. The land is very in just what you've read, the earth figures very prominently.
Mm-hmm. You have a chapbook out, Jeff Mason tells me. Are these in that chapbook?
No. Ooh. No, they're not.
Before we run out of time, how would one get a copy of your chapbook?
The chapbook is Phantom Books. The press is Phantom Books. And they're all, all of mine that I had from them are gone, but they're hand bound and letter pressed. So you would contact the press. And I'm not sure if they have any more left, but we'd have to find out. But they're beautiful.
So how did you get them to publish it?
I won their chapbook competition.
I can see why.
Oh, thank you.
Wow.
That's, thank you. How many poems are in a chapbook? These terms, you know, are common, but they're not common to me.
Usually around 25 to 50. Mm-hmm. I really like less in a chapbook, in a small chapbook. I think the short ones are wonderful.
Mm-hmm. You say you're collecting poems for an anthology or something?
I'm working on a full-length manuscript.
Full-length manuscript.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does that mean one poem spread over a long period of time or just a series of poems?
A series of poems. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why do you think, I mean, almost all children instinctively, I think, love poetry. And by the time they get to be freshmen in college, where I contacted them, 99% of them say, oh, poetry is just not my thing. What happens?
Oh, because it stops being the playful poetry, I think.
Who stops it?
Oh, classrooms.
Blaming teachers again.
Oh, I'm not blaming teachers, though. Well, I love teachers.
Don't be too hasty not to blame teachers. There is a new
book
out.
My husband is a teacher.
I just read a review of a brand new book called How to Read Poetry Like a Professor. Is that something you would recommend to people? Yes or no?
Oh, it depends on the professor.
Yes or no?
It depends on the professor. I do think that
What does the title suggest to you?
Oh, it suggests to me an old white man. In our canon, all of our books are filled with old white men, right? And a lot of that language is just on the page and is dead now. And we need to get out of this canon that's existed for so long and look at.
See, I think it would be better to say to write a book called How to Read Poetry as a 3-year-old.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's wonderful. Right? Yes. Oh, yes.
The minute I saw this title, I remember the chair of the English department when I was in college. The chair of the English department at the University of Minnesota came down to give us a program. And one of the things he said was, bragged, I'm at the point in my career where I never read a book without getting an article out of it. And I said, boy, is that the way to read a book? Whoa.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, something really messes people up.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I agree with Emerson. All people are poets. They just don't know it.
Oh, I absolutely agree.
But, on the brink of the waters of life, they're miserably dying of thirst, he says.
But don't you think poetry gets messed up when people get to thinking about it as something, as some great undertaking that has to be dealt with carefully?
Mm-hmm.
You move from one of my favorites, Phyllis McGinley, who is all music and laughter and rhyming and so on, to T.S. Eliot, where you're supposed to figure it out, all the imagery and so on and references.
Mm-hmm. Well, on the other hand, you do have to do it. You know, if you were to take the poem Aubrey just read and read it carefully and pay attention to the way in which she plays with sounds and moves from this sound to that sound and how they relate to each other, you know, all the way throughout the poem, you know, that's not just tossed out, right? That's very carefully done.
But also, there's an analogy to classical music. Pardon us, Aubrey, while we go on like this all the time.
No, it's wonderful.
The classical music, you can listen to... say they recently had a performance of Tchaikovsky's Fifth Symphony. Anybody can appreciate that music. The sound is right. Wonderful. When you hear it several times, you begin to hear into it. And when you work on it, you find the structure in it and so on. But it is immediately available to anybody who wants to hear it. But it's because it is so carefully structured, it admits of study and analysis. But how do you get that synthesis?
How do you keep the childlike delight
right.
at the same time that you get that heavy professorial analysis? I don't know how you do that. I have another question for you. Jane Hirschfield, she had just written a book called 10 Windows, A Ways into Poetry. And I was really struck by one of her remarks. She's one of my favorite current poets. She said, no good poem is entirely safe.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree with that?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Which is what's wrong with Hallmark cards, right? They're totally safe. No, I mean, mm-hmm. and your poems, I mean, you know, they're edgy.
Oh, thank you. That's a compliment. Thank you.
We have time for one more if you have one more to read.
Sure, yes. This is a very new one. It comes from a prompt from Poets and Writers. The website Poets and Writers has really great weekly writing prompts. And this one was a prompt about how scientists have recently found out that jellyfish sleep, and they did not think that they slept. So this is called Seascape. We have a nightlight with multiple settings, neon to neon in sliding hues. I imagine the jellyfish switches to sleep like this. First some peach, then aquamarine. When I say I want to be brainless, I mean my own is without lull, jalopy and ratchet. I shower for silence, static, and there I think salinity. Which man will own which aquifer? Which catchment system would keep us in green? Every single time I dream I'm Frodo, I go chicken and quick to Sauron, quick kowtow, and the ring is a hot potato. So there's the state of my soul. I think we're all here in Germany. I think I'm making of my children two white palaces, bright with spears. I want to look through my skin and see the ocean, the way the jellyfish can see the ocean, absent a thing that sees. Where I plant kale, there used to be an ocean. There used to be an entity we all crawled from, every luminous thing intact.
Well, boy, you, that's amazing.
See, reprint that chapbook.
Aubrey Ryan, it has been a joy to talk to you.
Thank you.
And keep writing, will you?
Thank you.
And thanks for being with us today.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
You know, Roel, we've run into some amazing poets.
It makes me almost glad I don't even try to write poetry, because the ability to these almost sing. I mean, the play of sounds and the ideas.
What interests me is the two Aubreys we've heard. The first Aubrey, the I Am Black and so on.
Totally different.
Powerful, yeah. Powerful stuff. And then the second Aubrey comes up with such interesting ideas and images. And that one about the the jellyfish seeing through, to see as a jellyfish does without eyes, you know, through the sky.
Right.
I thought that was filled with great stuff. Why don't you write like that?
Oh, man, don't I wish I could.
Well, don't I wish I could.
But I do enjoy hearing it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's...
I mean, it's just...
Well, we end Poetry Month on a positive note. That doesn't mean we're banishing poets by any means, but we deserve
that concentration.
We'll
be back to them, but I do have one more... anthology to recommend of poetry that is perfect for Poetry Month.
Be my guest.
I've come across this month, and I've already talked about Jill Bialowski's book, Poetry Will Save Your Life. It's an anthology of 51 poems, but it's not just an anthology. It's a memoir in which each of those 51 poems at some point in her life were life-saving, tremendously important, insightful.
That sort of like
saved her.
And what Aubrey
and that's
was talking
what Aubrey
about.
Is saying, yeah. That it happens to her too, so that she and Jill would agree. The book I think that does this best is a book I just came across by accident, and I can't get my mind off it. It's by Christian Wiman, W-I-M-A-N, who for a brief time was editor of Poetry Magazine. He, at the age of 39, I'm not sure how old he is now, developed a very painful and incurable cancer. But it apparently hasn't been immediately fatal. He did write a memoir that I've heard people talk about called The Bright Abyss, in which he confronts that cancer diagnosis.
Give me that title again.
The Bright Abyss.
The Bright Abyss. Okay.
He is the perfect person to have edited this book of this anthology of poems. It is called Joy, 100 Poems. And it deals with 100 poems from the 20th and 21st century, at least century modern and contemporary, Sylvia Plath and others like that, in which whatever the subject of the poem, and Sylvia Plath's aren't always pleasant, there are moments of joy. Define joy.
Oh.
He has a beautiful essay at the beginning of this anthology on joy.
That is a hard thing to define. It's wonderful when you experience it. And there have been moments in my life when I have thought, you know, it just, the spirit rises so that you can't express it. It's, and the interesting thing about that is when those moments have occurred, they're followed with the thought that I may never be this happy again.
You use happy and joy together. Are they related?
I think so.
Ah, the beautiful part of this essay is there are two sides to this. And I've been talking to people ever since I came across this anthology. There are people who, for them, happiness, joy is just an excess of happiness. It's the height. But for Christian Wyman and others, joy and happiness are two totally different things. You can be totally unhappy and find joy.
That's true. Happiness is more a state. Joy is some sudden explosion of, I don't know how to put it, but it's it just blossoms almost unexpectedly.
Well, you're using violent terms even, right? Explosion,
yeah,
right?
Uh-huh, yeah.
And it just happens. It's like a bomb going off.
Yeah.
And so what you're suggesting, and I think Christian Wyman does too, is it's momentary.
Yeah, oh, definitely. That's why I think when it's over with that I may never experience something like this again. Because I'm always bringing these downer thoughts in.
But it there's always there, whatever triggers that moment of joy, it seems to me some sense of the transcendent.
Yep, I'd agree with that. Definitely.
That all of a sudden, it which is why you and I are both having real trouble defining it, right?
That's true.
When it happens.
Yeah, you know
you
when it happens.
You come across it, but it's not anything you can sit down, I'm going to be joyful tomorrow.
You
right?
can't manufacture it. It's absolutely impossible. You cannot will yourself into joy. It just happens. And when it happens, there's nothing quite like it in the world.
And so it never really goes unnoticed, right?
Oh, I don't think so. I can remember every painful thing I've ever done, particularly to another person, but the happy things I remember are those moments of pure joy. And they are unforgettable. They really are.
Anyway, it is worth reading this book of 100 poems.
And it's called Joy?
Joy, 100 Poems by Christian Wyman, editor.
Well, if you get 100 moments of joy, you've got more than your share.
Well, these are poems in which that really, I mean, right in the middle of the poem that can be grim, there comes this moment that is ineffable.
Yeah, and those are the moments that you live for. And they're the things that make living just great. Oh, well, we've just about lived our moment of joy here, I think. But, of course, Scribble goes on. Roll Tweet and I will be back again next week, as we hope you will, for another session of Scribble.